Holding on Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph, about 10 lines from the top line, begins Asa Uni. We left off in the middle of the idea that if a person makes a song out of a pasuk from Shir HaShirim, and we discussed yesterday whether it's only Shir HaShirim, whether it applies more generally to Tanakh, then the Torah, it's not a good thing. The Torah puts on sackcloth and complains to the Eibishter that your sons are turning me into a harp that's used to entertain at parties.
Making songs
out of words of Torah, out of Shir HaShirim, or maybe more generally out of words of Torah, amounts to turning the Torah into something for entertainment, into making it like a harp for entertainment. And by the way, the expression of Yichoger Sack, the Alter Rebbe talks about in Torah Ur, is the idea that a sack is a metaphor for clipper, as a sack or a sackcloth is something external to a person's body that doesn't really belong there, just as clipper is to Kedusha. And so the idea is over here, when we say that the Torah puts on sackcloth, amounts to saying that the Torah is now being used as a source for the clippers rather than as a source for Kedusha. So we discussed yesterday at the very end, we talked about the various possibilities. If you're doing it to praise Hashem, then that may be different, the Yad Ramah says. Some of the Mepharshim want to say that maybe there's a distinction between Shir HaShirim and other parts of Tanakh. If you're doing it in order to learn the Pesukim, then better, then that's also different. Okay. And the fact of the matter is, this whole thing is not brought by the Rambam and Yad HaChazaka. It's not brought by the Shulchan Aruch. The Magen Avraham brings it. But so therefore, that may imply that it's not as serious a thing as the Gemara makes it out to be. Okay. Amalah, so this is where we're up to. Line begins Asuni. So the Torah complains that your children are making me like a harp that they use to entertain Leitzim. Amalah, so the Torah, so the Eivish just says, Viti, my daughter, Vishasha Ochlin Vishosin, my Mayis Askel. So what do you expect people to be Osek in when they're eating and drinking, if not Torah? Amar Lefanav, and the Torah says, Rebbeinu Shlomo, fine, by all means, let them be Osek in Torah, but not as a song, not as something for entertainment, but rather to actually learning. In Bali Mikrahein, if there are people who are experts in Mikra, Yaksuba Torah and Ovinaviyam of Aksuba, then let them be involved in learning Tanakh. The Imbali at a party, why not? Instead of entertaining with songs or whatever based on Pesukim, we're saying that you keep yourself busy, but you keep yourself busy by talking in Torah. Hello? Im Bali Mishnah, and if these are people who are experts in Mishnah, Yasku a Mishnah, the halachas of Haggadah, it's fine. Let them be involved in learning Mishnah and in learning halacha and Haggadah. Im Bali Talmud, and if there are people who are expert in Gemara, Yasku a Hilchos Pesach for Pesach, the Hilchos Atzeres for Atzeres, the Hilchos Chag for Chag, then let them be involved in learning the appropriate halachas to the appropriate time of year.
Let's go to the next wedding and sit down and learn Gemara.
Okay.
See how it looks.
Fine. Okay. The point is, singing is fine, but the point is, we're saying over here, don't make songs out of Pesukim of Torah, or at least not out of Shir HaShirim. Hey, Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Mishum Reb Shimon ben Chanan. You're holding on Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph. Okay. Reb Yaakov, now that we're learning, let's go. Reb Yaakov, Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph. Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph. The line begins Bat Seves.
Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph.
Okay. Hey, Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Mishum Reb Shimon Chananya. On the other hand, so we mentioned before in the last part of the Gemara before about when a person says a pasuk not in its proper time, like it is in a party as entertainment, then you're using pesukim for entertainment. We said it's not a good thing. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Elazar says in the name of Reb Shimon ben Chananya, or Reb Shur ben Chananya, kolakoda pasuk vizmane. Conversely, if a person reads a pasuk in the right time. For example, yes, you can be at a party, but you're saying the Pesukim as part of Kiddush, for example. Or, for example, different Mepharshim talk about different other possibilities. It includes, for example, that you learn about the Pesukim of the Karbanos on the appropriate Yom Tovim when they're brought, etc. Maybe Tovel Olam, such a person brings goodness to the world. Shenema, as the Pesuk says, a word said in the proper time, how good it is. So therefore, a word of Torah said in the right time is a very appropriate and very good thing. The right time is, for example, again, that you're using it, for example, let's say Rashi says, so you're taking a cup of wine in your hand, but you're doing Kiddush, let's say, but in general also, for example, that you're during the meal, you're not using the Pesukim as entertainment, but rather you're quoting them in order, for example, to say Dvar Torah, that's appropriate to the time. So that's a very good thing. You're drinking it with wine, but that's the difference. In other words, the problem is not doing it while you're drinking wine, the problem is doing it as entertainment versus as learning. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said another example of somebody who loses their place in Olam Haba. We said it's somebody who whispers over a wound. So the exact thing we had in the Mishnah was Avashol had said this, Avashol had said something else. Rabbi Akiva had said, besides a code of Sforim HaChatzonim, somebody who reads the Sforim HaChatzonim and Sira and whatever, as we talked about before. Also, we said, the Mishnah had said, somebody who whispers over a wound, and he says, all the illnesses that I placed on Mitzrayim, I will not place on you, because I, Hashem, am your healer. So our Gemara is going to discuss that. So Rabbi Yochanan says, we're talking about not just where he's saying the positive, but also where he spits beforehand. So therefore, so Rashi describes that when people say a lachash, when people say a charm like that, the usual thing is they spit and then they say the appropriate words of the charm or the spell or whatever. So therefore, it's very inappropriate to be spitting before saying the positive. And if you don't spit, so then we'll talk about it. Then it's not person doesn't lose his place in Olam Haba. But as we're going to discuss in the Gemara and based on what they're showing, so spitting afterwards is a question. I mean, hold on. Rashi says over here that first of all the issur is to spit first and then say the thing, because then it amounts to saying that you're mentioning Hashem's name or you're mentioning a positive in connection with spitting. So from Rashi, it comes out that spitting after saying it wouldn't be so bad. It wouldn't necessarily be mutter, but because spitting before it amounts to you're associating the posik, you're associating this name of Hashem and the posik with the spitting, as opposed to if you say the posik and later on you spit. It seems from Rashi that so Rashi brings from his Rebbe that it may not be that bad. On the other hand, again, other Rishonim disagree with that, and they're Shulchan Aruch and Yerodeya. So before or after, we're saying, you know, but again, there's a difference. There's one that actually loses the person his place in Olam Haba, and there's another one which may just be Osir. Doesn't necessarily go so far as Ein Lechelik Olam Haba, but it's still Osir. Rashi also mentions another point, which is, if you're saying the Pasuk or the name of Hashem or whatever in a foreign language, then Rashi brings from his Rebbe that would also be mutter because the only issur is when you have the way it's describing here in the Gemara. You spit before saying the pasuk and you say in the pasuk in Hebrew. So if you have either of those factors is not present, Rashi holds it would be okay. Again, other you spit and then you say the pasuk. All Gemara is saying based on the Mishnah, Ein Lechelik Olam Haba. So Rashi understands it to mean, first of all, it has to be the spitting is before the pasuk, and second of all, it has to be that the pasuk is being said in Hebrew. If you have the spitting after the pasuk, or if you have before or after, but the pasuk is being said b'loshon lav, then Rashi says it's not such a problem. But again, some other posts can disagree with that and say either way it would be a problem, just fine. You could say in one case he loses his place in Olam Haba, and in the other place maybe it's not that bad, but it would still be awful. I'm not sure what you just said, but not Hebrew and English. No, we're talking about if you say it only in English, for example. Okay. All right. So anyway, the point is you don't mention Shem Shemayim in connection with spitting. What about, by the way, the Taz asks on that thing in Yerodeah, so what about that in Aleinu we spit after saying Shem Mishtachim Lehevel Lodrik, and then we say Banach the Kodim Mishtachim today? It used to be a more universal minhag. Eventually it was forgotten in most Kehillahs, but the fact is we do it. But anyway, the Taz says that there is not an issue because there the spitting is obviously being done not in connection with Banach Makodim Mishtachim Lehevel, but rather it's a continuation of Hey Mishtachim Lehevel Lodrik. They bow down to vanity and nothingness, and therefore we spit, and therefore that's fine. Okay. It's not. Rav Omar Afilu Negatzarat. Rav says that it's not only the Mishnah had mentioned the Pasuk Kolamachla Shasamti B'Mitzrayim, even if, for example, you use for the purpose the Pasuk Negatzarat, which there's no name of Hashem in that Pasuk, and that Pasuk doesn't really talk about healing at all. It talks about a Negatzarat. It doesn't say anything about healing it. It says if a person has a Negatzarat, you bring him to a Kohen. Even that would be offered. Which means, by the way, so on the face of it, what we mean is if you're spitting and then saying the pasuk negatzaras, that would also be also. The Rambam actually understands Rav to be saying that even without spitting, just saying the pasuk over an injury, over a wound, in and of itself is also. Regardless, even if it's a pasuk like negatzaras, which in and of itself does not indicate healing and does not mention a name of Hashem, just the mentioning of pasuk itself over. What?
Next point.
There's no name of Hashem in the Pasuk Neged Tzarach. That's the point. Just saying a Pasuk over a wound is Osir. Now, it is, now, on the other hand, so the post can talk about, there's a lot of distinctions in this. First of all, if it's a matter of Pikuach, there's more Gemara down there. If it's a matter of Pikuach Nefesh, then you're allowed regardless. So these kinds of things that we're saying that you're not allowed to do is are waved in the face of Pikuach Nefesh, like most things. But also they talk about if you're doing it, first of all, if you're doing it in order for protection ahead of time, a person is not sick right now, and for example, you're going to say psukim, or they themselves, or somebody else is going to say psukim for them, that's perfectly fine. We know all the time. You say tilim for protection. We say various psukim in Krishma Shalamita for protection, etc. That kind of thing is perfectly mutter. The Gemara itself talks about it in Shavuos. And even if you're talking about the person is sick, the isser, the primary issue is if you're saying the pasuk right there over the wound, because then you're turning the pasuk into some kind of spell, like you're taking a pasuk from the Torah, from Chachmasa, Ratzon, and Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and turning it into some kind of refuah. As opposed to if you're saying it elsewhere, that might not be such a problem.
Well, somebody just struck a bone in the
Yeah, but that's not a pasuk. You say Chad Chad, you said that's not a pasuk, though. That's a lot. Okay, Rav Chanina Amar Filip HaYikra El Moshe. Rav Chanina says, even if you use the words Vayikra El Moshe, which Bechlal doesn't mention sicknesses at all, even that, you're just the person wants to be saved in the schus of Divrei Torah, you're not allowed to do that. Because again, you're not allowed to take a psukim of the Torah, words of Torah, and use them as a lachash, and use them as a spell to cure.
Just say
Vayikra El Moshe by itself, over the wound, again.
Why are you not, if you're not spitting?
Because even if you're not spitting, you're taking Divrei Torah and turning them into a refuah. Which is inappropriate. The Torah is much higher. The Torah is much higher than a refuah.
Oh.
So therefore, it's degrading it.
Is that even a
Tachama? No, if the person is if it's Pekuach Nefesh, that's different. Pekuach Nefesh, the Moses, Derech HaMoses.
It could be
considered a bit similar to Avodah Zarah.
No, it's not really Avodah Zarah per se, but it's not really Avodah Zarah, but it's still degrading the Torah.
The Rambam has the rule to say that 10 psukim, one of them is Negev Zarah.
That's fine. You're not doing it over the Makkah. You're not doing it right there and right there over the Makkah like a spell. Okay, turn it up on. So now we're going to talk about a couple of dinim involving healing and involving spells. Sochen of a mash machine with name of Ayin B'Shabbos. You're allowed to smear oil on your stomach, and you're allowed, a sick person even, and you're allowed to massage his stomach. You're allowed to do that on Shabbos. We'll see later on. The Gemara will describe how exactly you do it in such a way that it won't be the way you do it on weekdays. The lochshin lachishas
you'll
see soon in the Gemara what the exact data is. The normal way which you do it during the week, would be you smear oil and then you massage it in, So we'll see soon how you do it in this case. Or no, the usual way actually would be the other way around. You massage first, like to soften up the skin, and then you apply the oil. So we'll see soon how you do it on Shabbos. Okay. The lochshin lachishas nechashim v'akrabim b'Shabbos. You're also allowed to whisper spells about snakes and scorpions on Shabbos. So Rashi says we're talking about a spell that you're going
to achieve.
So Rashi says the point is that the snake or the scorpion shouldn't bite you. Now the point is, it comes out from what Rashi is saying, that the spell causes the snake or the scorpion to be immobilized. It won't move. The point of it is, therefore, it's not also mitzad seder. It's not also as the malacha of trapping on Shabbos. Because you're not actually doing anything, you're just saying something. The Rambam has a different understanding of this lochsh and lachishas nechash and bakrab and b'shabbos, which is we're talking about somebody who was already bitten by a snake or a scorpion, and you're whispering a spell over him to make him feel better. So therefore, the point is you're allowed to do it because you're not really accomplishing anything by it. All you're doing is it's like a placebo to make the guy feel better, and that's fine. You're allowed to do that.
Because the Rambam doesn't believe.
Because the Rambam doesn't believe in the efficacy of these kinds of things. Right. Okay. What? No, that's what Rashi says, because Rashi's talking about before the snake or scorpion bites, but Rambam understands it's after they bite.
You do have scorpions, I don't know, you can charm them.
What does the Rambam say about a kamea?
You
see of the kamea, the shaman.
I don't know, fine, a kamea, fine, the person believes in it. Again, it has a placebo effect. All right, you're also allowed to put a keli on the eye on Shabbos. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is we're talking about it's a metal keli, so it's cold. So that way, for example, the person's eye feels overheated, he has an eye infection or whatever, you put a cold metal keli on it to help him feel better. Or Rashi says the second explanation is if a person has, his eye is aching, you put a ring around it. According to the second thing, it would probably be some kind of segula. Anyway, you're allowed to do that kind of thing on Shabbos. Yeah. Amr Rav Shimon.
Why wouldn't you be allowed?
Because you would think that all these things might be considered refuah. In general, you're not allowed to do refuah on Shabbos. The Chachamim made a rule that you're not allowed to take various medicines on Shabbos, unless, of course, Sakonis Nefarshis or whatever, Mishum Shchikas Samamonim, because the Chachamim were concerned that you're going to grind up ingredients for medicine. So therefore, things like the ones we're describing over here don't involve. There's no medicine involved in the first place. Therefore, there's no reason to be good.
Fine.
We're not talking about if it's at the point of the Kuach Nefesh.
No, but even if it's the loss of an eye, you're not allowed to treat it on Shabbos by grinding.
If it was a question of a loss of an eye, but you were just talking about a person who has a bit of an ache in his eye. Okay, no, we're going to learn in Avodah Zarah. We'll learn in a few months, says Hashem, in Avodah Zarah. We'll have a whole sugya about that. But yes, if you have an eye infection, yes, you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to treat it. We'll get to that. Okay. When is this talking about that you're allowed to use a keli to put on the eye? If it's something that would otherwise be allowed to be moved on Shabbos, that's not mukta. But if it's a keli that's mukta, also, then it's also to do that.
Absolutely.
Well, again, unless it's a matter of that you might lose the eye or whatever. Okay. Continue the Braisa. The in Sholem Midbar Shadim B'Shabbos. You're not allowed to ask things of Shadim on Shabbos. Which means, Rashi describes what we're talking about is that, let's say a person has lost something. So he asks Shadim to inform him where is this thing located. Now, on Shabbos, it would be a problem. Rashi says, maybe it's a problem of you're looking after your affairs, your weekday affairs on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do it. One second. Rabbi Yossi, I'm after Cholos. So Rabbi Yossi says you're not allowed to do it on weekdays either. To ask a Shadim. Wait. You notice that Ein is in parenthesis over here because the girsa we have over here is Ein halacha k'rab yasi, but there's a different girsa that some of the Shonim have that halacha k'rab yasi. The af Rab yasi lo omra el mishum sakana. And why did Rab yasi say that? Because of sakana. So now you have, again, based on these two different girsas, you have two different ways of understanding. Is the Gemara saying that the halacha is not like Rab yasi? You are allowed to ask Shadim on weekdays, just not on Shabbos. But Rabbi Yossi is warning you that you could get involved in sakana, and therefore it's not a good idea. Or because once you're involved with Shadim, they might go on to be harmful or whatever. The other possibility, if we say halacha to Rabbi Yossi, is Rabbi Yossi himself is not saying that it should be awesome at kishuf or whatever. He's just saying it should be awesome at sakana. In practice, you have, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, you find different opinions on the question that actually it's interesting. The Alter Rebbe brings it. The Alter Rebbe doesn't have these halachas in Yerideya in his Shulchan Aruch, but he does have these halachas of Shabbos. So therefore, it comes up in this connection because we're mentioning asking them on Shabbos. You have some of the poskim say that it's also to ask Shadim for anything at all. And then you have other poskim who say you're allowed to do like what Rashi described over here. You're not allowed to ask them to do something for you, but you're allowed to ask them, for example, where is this thing? Like Rashi described, you have something lost or stolen from you or whatever, and you ask
Shadim, where it is.
Yeah, you ask a shed where it is. Why would it be any different than asking your neighbor on down the block where it is?
A shed is
half mensch, half malach. Big deal.
Was he a mensch or not?
Yeah, he's a half person, half malach. Whatever it is. The point is, not
a lot of people that are half mensch.
Yeah, okay.
I know a lot of people that are half mensch.
Come on. Okay. So the point is, again, so you have Rishonim who say that you're not allowed to ask them at all, and then you have Rishonim, the Rosh, for example, who learns that, yes, you are allowed to ask Shadim for information. For example, where is this lost object or whatever? So that, we're saying over here, you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos because you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos because you would say Chetzicha, but you would be allowed to do it on weekdays. I don't know. Okay. As we have the case, we can see that getting involved with Shadim is dangerous. We have the example of Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, who was asking Shadim to do things for him or to help him or whatever. The shed, Rashi learns, wanted to harm him. So he was swallowed up into a nest happened to him that he was swallowed up into a palm tree. And then the palm tree split open and he was saved from the shed. But we see, in other words, there's different stories over here exactly what the nest was it that he got into the tree in the first place, or is it that he got out safely? But either way, the point is, it's dangerous to tangle with shade. So best, you're best not. Even if you're technically allowed to do it on weekdays, it's not such a good idea. More in this connection, going back to healing on Shabbos. Sochen u'mamash mishin b'bnei me'ayim b'Shabbos. As we said before, you're allowed to smear oil on a person's stomach on Shabbos, even if he's sick, or massage on Shabbos. As long as you don't do it in the same way you do on weekdays. Now, how do you do it on weekdays? Pechiyovid. So how do you do it on Shabbos to make it different? Rav Chama Rav Chanina on a sochba hakach memashmish. Rav Chama Rav Chanina says what you do is normally on weekdays you would first massage the skin to soften it up and then you apply the oil so it'll penetrate there. On Shabbos instead, apply the oil and then do the massage.
And he says yes,
so that's on Shabbos you do that. On Shabbos you do the opposite of the usual. Rav Yochanan on a sochba memashmish about that. So Rav Yochanan says that's not enough to be a difference. What you have to do is apply the oil and massage at the same time. That would be the shinui, and then that's how you would be allowed to do it.
Why do you apply the oil?
So no, according to Rabbi Yechon, you do them both at the same time. You pour the oil, and then you rub in the oil and massage at the same time. Okay. Turn it up on them. Getting now back to shadim. Sore shemen the sore beitim. Sore meaning shadim. Sore literally means princes. There are rishonim who have to give us a shadim. So the plural, the plural of shed. Shemen that are called through oil. You have ones, for example, that you use some oil and you use that as like a medium to call them, which again is not it's not avodah zara in the sense you're not ascribing to them any independent power. It's no different than calling a person or whatever. This happens to be these particular shadim. The way to call them is through using a container of oil. Or the sareh basim, or you have other ones where the way to call them is you use an eggshell. Mutaran l'shobahen. You're allowed to ask questions of them. Elam Mepneshim Achazvin. But there is the fact that they lie. So again, you have two different girsois over here, which is the girsa that we have over here with Ella is, means in other words, you could ask them, but practically speaking, you're not really going to get much out of it because Machazvin, because they don't always tell the truth. Other Rishonim have the girsa without the word Ella, and they understand that Gemara is saying, why are you allowed to ask them on Shabbos? Because anyway, they lie. Anyway, you're not really getting any useful information out of them. So therefore, you might as well. It's no different than Stam Dvorim B'Kalim.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this happened as well. Is it sharp today?
Continues the bride. When it comes to whispering to call the shed, you for that purpose you use oil in a container. The normal way is not to do it with oil that's in your hand. It doesn't do any good. If you want to call the shed, you have to have a container of oil, and then you whisper to the shed over the container. I don't know. Lefichach, therefore, because of that, because therefore, you always have the concern that what if you have now a container of oil which may have been used to call shadim, and therefore it might be dangerous for somebody else to use. There might be a shed may have gotten power over it. Therefore, you have no problem smearing your skin with oil from somebody else's hand because it can't have been used for kishuf, because we just said it's not kishuf. It can't be used to call shadim when it's in his hand. But it's not a good idea to smear on your skin oil from a container because that container may have been used to call shadim previously. And the Gemara gives an example.
So where do you take the oil from?
If somebody else offers you oil to smear on your skin from their hand, they offer you here.
They took it from the keli.
That may be, but once it's out of the keli and in their hand, then it loses its potency.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
But the point is, if somebody that you don't know offers you oil in a keli and offers you to smear it on your skin, be wary of it. And the Gemara gives an example. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Mar to Ikla Lahushpiz. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Mar to one time visited a certain inn. Isile Mishcha b'mona. They brought him oil in a container, and he didn't realize there could be a problem. Shof. He smeared it on his skin, on his face. Nafkin lam simche ba'ape, and then boils or blisters developed on his face. Nafak l'shuk. He went out into the street. Chazise ahi. A certain woman saw him. Omra, she says, Zika dechemes kachazina hacha. I see over here the spirit of chemes. Which Rashi says, there's a shed named Chemes. I see you've been, the reason you have those boils and whatever on your face is because you've been attacked by the shed named Chemes. Or I think the Yad Ramah says by a magician named Chemes, whatever. Avdalei Milsa, so she did for him a cure, an antidote. The Ipsi, and he was healed. So the point is, therefore, that's why I said don't accept oil in containers from unknown strangers is the bottom line. Now, getting back to, we quoted in the mission of the Pasuk that a person might conceivably say over the wound, which we said is also to do. We said the Pasuk went, all of the illnesses that I placed in the Mitzrayim, I won't place on you, because I'm Hashem, your healer. Now, you have a contradiction, and the Pasuk seems to be contradicting itself. If you need a healer, it implies that you have the illnesses, but the Pasuk is saying, I won't put them. So that's the question. See if the Pasuk says, the Eved doesn't put the illness on you in the first place, then what do you need healing for? So Rabbi Bamari answers, this is what Rabbi Yechanan said, Nikra zeme atme nidrash. You can understand this Pasuk is self-explanatory, actually. Shenema, because the first half of the Pasuk says, the Eved says, if you listen to the voice of Hashem, then the Pasuk continues, implying, if you listen to the Eved in the first place, you'll never have the illnesses placed on you. The Imlay Tishma, on the other hand, if you don't listen to Hashem, Osim, then the Evishter will place illnesses on you. Nevertheless, Ki Ani Hashem Refecha. Nevertheless, though, I Hashem will have Rachmanis on you and heal you.
So that's
what the Pasuk means. It's called Machla Shasanim Samlay Osim Alecha if you follow what the Evishter said. On the other hand, if you don't, then you will get illnesses, you will get Kalamachla Shasanim Mitzrayim, but on the other hand, you will get a Refuah. Ki Ani Hashem Refecha. And Marsha explains on the basis of Rashi on the Pasuk over there that the point is, what the Eved is also saying is, even if I do have to put these machlok on you, because I, Hashem, am your healer, unlike a human being who, when he heals, there's always, a human doctor heals, there's always some scar left or whatever, there's always some remnant of it. When the Eved heals a person, it's as if it was never there in the first place, because the Eved takes it completely away. There's no after. Since we're talking about sickness and healing, so the Gemara tells us a story. Amar Rama Baba Chanan, Kshachala Rabbi Eliezer, when Rabbi Eliezer became sick. Now, Rabbi Eliezer Gadol, this is the famous Rabbi Eliezer, the Chaver of Rabbi Yeshua, the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva, etc. When he became sick, so Marsha seems to understand, we're talking about over here, that this was his final illness, which is the same one in that case that we learned about back on Daf Samaches. We had a whole story involving him and the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva and everybody. On the other hand, from Rashi over here, it seems to be implying that not necessarily, and there are Rabbi Isaac Halevi and Doris of Hashanim has a long discussion of it based on various nuances in the Gemara over here that he says, no, it wasn't his final illness, because for one thing, at his final illness, we said the Chachamim had to stay 4 amos away from him. Here it seems they were right next to him. So therefore, he says just there was an earlier time in his lifetime when he was sick. It happens. The person becomes sick.
Do we know the illness it was?
No. The Gemara is not a medical text. It doesn't tell us. It just tells us that he was sick. Nichnasu Tamidim Levakri. He says, Tamidim came to visit him. Amalahen, he says to them, Chema Aza Yesh Ba'olam. There's a great anger in the world. What does that mean? Rashi says he doesn't mean the world as a whole. He means himself. He means, obviously, the Eivishter must be angry at me that I'm very, very sick. Marshaller, and so do various other Mephoshim, that no, what he means is there is a tremendous anger in the world, either in the sense Marshall says that, again, he holds, it's referring to the same illness as back on Samachet. So therefore, remember, we had over there in the Gemara that Rabbi Eliezer had said that you guys are going to end up being killed, you're going to be among the Asar Arubi Malchus, so you should know that Eivishter, there's an anger from the Eivishter that's hovering over you. Or,
was upset about that?
No, he himself is saying, Chema Ali Yesh Ba'ilam. Or another explanation is Rabbi Eliezer is saying that it must be that the Eivishter is angry at the world, and therefore I'm sick for a kapara, for Yisurim of the tzaddiks for the generation. Everybody else started crying, and Rabbi Akiva started laughing. As you have the famous story at the end of Marcus when they saw the ruins of the Beis Mikdash, etc. Omer lo lo ma'at masachet, but ask him, why are you crying? And why are you laughing? I don't know. So he says, Lou, why are you crying?
Yeah.
What do they say? What do you mean, why are we crying? Esher Sefer Torah, Shoy B'tzayv L'Nivka. What do you think? The Sefer Torah, Rabbi Eliezer, was like a Sefer Torah. Is lying here in pain. We shouldn't cry. Amalahen, he answers them, L'chachani Mitzachek. No, but that's exactly why I'm happy. Kol Zman Shani Roya, Rebbe, because look at this. All of this time, I've been seeing Rabbi Eliezer, that he has tremendous success in Olam Hazeh. His wine never becomes sour. His flax never gets a blight, never gets damaged while it's growing. Vein shamani mavish, his oil never becomes rancid. Vein dushani madvish, his honey never becomes never goes off. Amarti, so I thought to myself, Shema chas v'shalom kibbol Rebbe Yelomi. Maybe chas v'shalom Rebbe Eliezer has received his whole reward in Olam Haza, and what's going to be left to Olam Haba. Now, a couple of Mefarshim asked the question, why is Rebbe Akiva even thinking that? You don't have, aren't there many tzaddikim who have it good in this world and also in Olam Haba? What would be the problem?
We see many
tzaddikim who are comfortably off in this world, and they also have Olam Haba waiting for them. Why is Rebbe Akiva thinking that might not be the case with Rebbe Eliezer? So the Be'er Sheva gives an interesting explanation. He says on the basis of a Gemara in Erchin, which says that if a person goes 40 full days without any kind of yisurin happening to him, and yisurin, by the way, the Gemara says, can even mean you reach into your pocket for change and you pull out the wrong amount of change. It's also it's a little bit of an annoyance. If a person goes 40 full days without even the tiniest annoyance like that, then it means he's received his whole schar in this world and there's nothing left for him to happen. So Rabbi Akiva is not just saying that I see that all of Rabbi Eliezer's crops, etc., are successful. He means b'chlal. I've seen that for the last little while, Rabbi Eliezer has not been having any problems whatsoever. So maybe based on that Gemara, then maybe
40 days or 40 years.
40 days, it says. I'm one of my kids' tapes. There's a murder story involving a mechutan of the Ruzhiner, who had something like this happen to him. He's a rich guy. Everything is always going swimmingly. Everything is always going his way until he thinks to himself, you know what? Based on that Gemara, I'm in trouble over here. Yeah, and then the upshot is he ends up giving away all of his property. He becomes a poor person, and many years pass. Eventually, there comes a point when he really hits rock bottom. He's in the mikveh, and his clothes are stolen from him, and then he realizes now I have only the Eibishter to rely on. There's no way I can go from here but up. Anyway, so that's what Rabbi Akiva is saying over here. That's it.
The reverse is not necessarily true, because he can be afflicted by many, many things. That doesn't mean that he has a beautiful Olam Haba.
That's true, but that depends on the person. Yeah.
You can also be very careful.
Yeah, okay. But Akshav Shani Roya Rebbe Bitsar, so now that I see that Rebbe is in pain, Ani Sameach, so I'm happy. Because now I see, but that's what he's saying. Because now I know that you have your place in Olam Haba, it's secure. No, but that's what we just said. I thought that maybe if you're having this, and actually the Ben Yehoyada has an interesting nuance on it. He mentioned four things that are being successful of Rebbe Eliezer's, four crops of his. Connected the four areas of Torah, Pshat Rem is Zerush and Soid. So maybe therefore as a reward for his efforts in Pshat Rem is Zerush and Soid, he was Zoicha just to these things and not to Olam Haba. But now that he sees the four Yisoidis of which Rabbi Eliezer's body is composed, Eish, Mayim, Ruach, Ofer, are now all suffering, then he realizes that no, the Eibishter has not just paid back Rabbi Eliezer in this world. He still has a big Gan Eden waiting for him. So Rabbi Eliezer asks Akiva, do you think I left out any part of the Torah that I didn't do? So Rabbi Akiva says, okay, but after all, Rebbe, you taught us, as the Pasuk says, ki odem ein tzaddik ba'aretz, there's no person in the world who is a 100% tzaddik, asher ya'aseh tov v'lo ya'aseh, who does good and never misses the mark. A person, as a human being, there's always higher to go.
There's always something, not necessarily
wrong per se, but there's always higher levels in avodah to reach. There's in fact a verse, by the way, from the Minchas Elazar on this that says that the point Rabbi Akiva is making in this and also in the next story is the other Chachamim maybe are thinking that in the next story we're going to see the Chachamim praise Rabbi Eliezer in various ways, the amount of good he's accomplishing in the world, but Rabbi Akiva wants to make it clear, you know what, Rabbi Eliezer, it's not like you've accomplished everything you have to in this world and therefore the world has no more need of you. Adarabah, the world has much more need of you. You still have avodah to do. Therefore, we need you to still remain here in the world.
When
Rabbi Eliezer became sick, four Kenim came to visit him. So the previous story was a Talmidim. Here it's Abba's Kenim. So before it was a Talmidim, including Rabbi Akiva, here it's four of his colleagues. Rabbi Akiva is also one of the colleagues because eventually he became great enough to be considered a colleague of Rabbi Eliezer, a chaver of Rabbi Eliezer. So therefore, these are two different stories. Anyway. Rabbi Taufin, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva. Nen Rabbi Taufin v'omer, Rabbi Taufin first spoke up and said, Toivat of Yisrael mitipa shav shomin. You, Rabbi Eliezer, are better for the Jewish people than drops of rain. because rain is good, does us good in Olam Hazeh. But you, Rebbe, are good for us by Olam Hazeh over Olam Abba. Nana Rabbi Yeshua Vama, then Rabbi Yeshua spoke up and said, Toivat Elisio Yosem Gal Gochama, you're better for the Jewish people than the sun. Gal Gochama Ba'olam Hazeh, because the sun only helps us in this world, and in the next world, eventually, Shema Otis Mishad Shisrashi says, eventually, La'os Lava, the sun and the moon are going to be recreated in a new way. The Rabbi Ba'olam Hazeh Ba'olam Abba, whereas you are good for us in Olam Hazeh and in Olam Abba. Nen Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah v'amar, and then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah spoke up and said, Toivat Yisrael, Yosem Av Ve'em. You, Rabbi Eliezer, are better for the Jewish people than father and mother. Sha'av Ve'em Ba'olam Hazeh, because the father and mother are help you in this world, they bring you into this world. V'Rebbe Ba'olam Hazeh V'Olam Haba. Now, why? What's the point of these various things they're mentioning? So there's a lot of different explanations. Well, right. So there's a lot of different explanations. And Maharal talks about the idea that rain is, You plant a seed in the ground. Afterwards, you need rain to help out that the seed should grow. So therefore, so Rav Tarfon is starting with that. Rabbi Yeshua goes on to say, even beyond that, it's not just like you help, like rain helps, but you already need a seed planted. You're like the sun, where without the sun, you wouldn't be able to see at all. The sun is all that's needed in order for there to be light. And then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah adds, even more than that, though, the sun doesn't bring things into existence. Your parents do. And therefore, in that sense, you're even great. And therefore, beyond even being like the rain or like the sun, you're even greater. You're even greater than a person's parents who bring him into the world. There's a lot of other different explanations. Marshall talks about the idea of rain is on this level of the world. The sun is higher up, and they're in the sky. The father and mother are even higher in ruchniistika levels.
Well, without sun, rain doesn't mean it. There's no growth.
Indeed, but the point is that in other words,
not enough.
Without rain, you don't have too much either.
Right, but without rain, you could have irrigation, for example. But the point is that the first Tanna, Rav Tarfon, is saying rain, and then Rabbi Yeshua is coming and adding not only like rain but like sun.
Yeah, you have to be both.
Right, and there's another explanation. There's also another explanation. For example, rain isn't always convenient. The sun is that you always need the sun, otherwise the earth would freeze. And your parents, your b'chol wouldn't exist without them. So whatever, there's a lot of different explanations. No, without your parents, you wouldn't even exist. Okay. So those were the first three. Then Rabbi Akiva v'amar chavivin yisurim. Then Rabbi Akiva spoke up and said, yisurim are a very precious thing. Because they're a kapara. Amar lahem, so when Rabbi Eliezer hears this, he says, samchuni, sit me up, help me sit up. The Eshma Divrei Akiva Talmidi. Let me hear more carefully the words of my Talmud Akiva. Shama Chavivin Yisurim. That he says that Yisurim are a precious, great thing. Amalei Akiva Zuminayin Law. So he says, Akiva, where do you get that idea from? That Chavivin Yisurim.
So why do we say in the Tzila Blei Yisurim?
Yeah. Where we say? Hold on. Where in Tzila Blei Yisurim?
Right.
If the kapara can happen without yisurim, sure, that would be better, especially because the Gemara talks about it in other places. Yisurim can prevent a person from learning Torah. So there's the yisurim shalava and the yisurim she'ena shalava, the Gemara discusses in Brachas. Yisurim shalava, where they don't interfere with a person's learning, and yisurim she'ena shalava, like Rebbe Elazar Reb Shimon had, rather, yeah. Where he's able to control when they come and then when they go.
So is it needed or is
so
it
so sometimes they're needed. Sometimes they're
Rebbe Elazar ben Shimon.
No, Rebbe Elazar ben Shimon was the one who was able to control that they go away by the day and they come back by night.
Rebbe couldn't do it.
How did Rebbe do it?
Because he got rid of them.
He got rid of them with the whole story with the mice over there that is their maidservant was going to sweep away, and he says, "Barachma v'chamasav." Okay. Omar said, "Rabbi Akiva says Mikrani Jodesh. I can darshan it based on the following pasuk. The pasuk tells us that Shemes Yeshana Menashe b'moch, and Menashe, the king Menashe, the Rosha, who we're going to learn about more extensively later in the parak, was 12 years old when he became king. V'chamishim v'chamesh shana balach v'yerushalayim. V'gomer, he was 55 years king in Yerushalayim. V'yasar ad ha'enei Hashem, and the pasuk says he did evil in the eyes of Hashem.
Oh, here we go again.
Now, Uchtiv. Menashe's father was Chizkiyah. Now, let's consider. You have a pasuk that says like this. Gam eila mishle shloime. Also these, this is the last dozen or so chapters, the last seven chapters of Sefer Mishlei, are the Mishlei Shloimei, Asher Hekiku, Anshe Chizkiyah Melech Yehuda, which Chizkiyah, and which the men of Chizkiyah Melech Yehuda strengthen. In other words, the Mishlei is all about the important. The Mishalim in Mishlei are a lot of them are about the importance of learning Torah and staying away from Chochmas Chitzonius and whatever. So Chizkiah strengthened that in his times. In fact, the Rashi brings from the Gemara in Baba Basra that Chizkiah and his group actually wrote Sefer Mishlei. In other words, Shlomo wrote the original draft of it, and then Chizkiah and his people put it into the form that we have now. So we see, in other words, that Chizkiah was making a tremendous effort to strengthen Torah in Eretz Yisrael, as we learned before about the Noach Cherev, etc. So you have to ask, Chizkiah Melech Yehudah Chol Olam Kula Limid Torah, Chol Menashe Melech Limid Torah. Do you think that Chizkiah taught the whole rest of the world Torah and didn't teach his own son Menashe? Obviously, he taught Menashe Torah, but did it do any good? No. Elamit Koil Torah Shatarach Boy. With all of the effort that Chizkiah put into Menashe during his first 12 years, when we call Amal Sha'amabai and all the hard work that he, all the efforts that he put into him, Loi Ha'elo L'mutav El Yisurin. What brought Menashe to the right path is Yisurin. So therefore we see how precious Yisurin are. That he did Shuva only after he had Yisurin.
Why did he have to show him some, because
the son had Bechira Chopshis, like everybody else does, and chose the wrong thing. He saw that that's why he didn't want to get married in the first place. That's true, but yeah. Okay.
Same with David, the same with
Yitzchak. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, where do we see that Yisurim are what brought Menashe to do Tshuva? The Pasuk says, Vaydabar Shama Menashe Vel Amu Vel Yikshivu. The Eibishter spoke through Nevi'im to Menashe and to his people, but they didn't listen. They kept on worshipping Avodah Zarah and doing all kinds of other Averis. So the Pasuk continues, Hashem brought against them the generals of the king of Ashur. This is already, by the way, this is a generation after Sancheiriv and his army had been destroyed. But apparently Ashur's power had been built back up enough, so yeah.
Did
they actually warn? Yeah, they actually sent to warn Menashe and his people what's going to happen.
Bring the king of Ashur?
Yeah. By Yukadurus Menashe Bachotchim, they captured Menashe using hooks. By Yasru of Anchushtayim, and they arrested him using Nechushtayim. The simple meaning of Nechushtayim means chains made out of copper. But I'll tell you in a second. There's a piece of Nechushes. But I'll tell you in a second. There's a piece that we don't have here in our Gemara. There's a piece of the story that we don't have here in our Gemara, but it's brought in Ein Yaakov, and most of the Rishonim have the Girsa as well. So I'll speak it out outside. And we'll see that it was more than just copper. It was more than just copper chains. Anyway, by Yelchehu Bavela, and they brought him to Bavel.
They
didn't kill him for their own reasons. They wanted to
talk
to him.
They're having a good time.
Yes, Uchtiv, and the Pasuk says, when he was in trouble, when he realized what trouble he's in, Chila Pnei Hashem Alekav, he begged the face of Hashem, he davened to the Eibishter, by Yikonam Ma'od Milifnei Alekei Abosav, he humbled himself very greatly in front of Hashem, the God of his fathers, by Yispalal Eilav, and he davened to him, by Yitosoloi, and the Eibishter accepted his tefillah, the Eibishter was Bavilik Zichtim, he's willing to accept him, by Yitosoloi, by Yitosoloi Hashem, by Rizkoch and Rifke, means the Eibishter accepted it. Yeah, I'll tell you in a second, Hold on, I'll tell you. By Yishmat Chinosei, and he listened to his tefillah. By Yishivei Yerushalayim Amalchusei, and he returned into Yerushalayim to his kingship. By Yede Menashe Ki Hashem Hu Elikim, and thus Menashe knew that Hashem is God. Holamata Shechaviv Yisurim. So you see from this how great Yisurim are. That's the only thing that brought Menashe back to the right path.
He stay righteous after that?
So we'll talk about that later in the Gemara when we get to him.
When he's making fun of the Pesukim, is that after that? Or
no, that was before that, obviously. That was before. The Gemara is going to essentially say later that the last 33 years of his life he did Tshuva. The question is, though, whether his Tshuva won him back his place in Adam Haba or whether it just won him back the ability to go and become king and then continue to be king. Anyway.
Would you rather be king or get Olam Haba?
In Ein Yaakov, again, it gives much more detail to the story over here. This Nechushtayim that they put him in is not just copper chains, but they took a copper container with holes in it and lit a fire under it and stuck him into it. So in fact, Maharshal says that's where the word Nechushtayim means like double Nechushet. It means the container itself was made out of copper, and the bottom of it, Nechushta, in Hebrew, in Mishnayos, also means the bottom of a pot or something, or the bottom of an oven or whatever, was directly on the fire. So he's having a very hard time of it. Yeah, so Nechushtayim, like a double Nechushet. Yeah.
Very
yeah.
hard time with
yeah.
that, yeah.
So what happens? Okay, so one second, yeah. So he realizes he's in trouble. So he thinks to himself, well, I can't very well dive into the Eibishter. He's angry at me for all that Averus I've been doing. I guess, should I bother with the other gods? Well, they're worth nothing anyway. What am I going to do with them? But he starts davening to all the major and minor gods, and of course nothing happens. And then he thinks to himself, you know what, first let me try the Eidishta after all. And actually he says, on the side of it here, it brings the last piece from the Ein Yaakov and from the Aruch, that now he says basically, Hashem, you have to answer me, and if you answer me, then good. If not, then I'm just going to figure you're no different than the others that I called to.
Oh, boy.
And then the Eidishta still accepted that, you know, as little a tshuva as it was. Right? Yeah, kind of put the Eidishta on the spot, which
but
is the next thing.
There's some truth, I mean, in that he could have thought.
Yeah, but it's still a chutzpah different way to say it. And by the way,
there's no truth in that. Hashem doesn't always answer someone just because they have chutzpah.
Well, that's what we're going to say, that there were three people who tried this kind of thing, Menashe being one of them. By the way, you're asking why it says Vayeosser Loi. Later on, the Gemara is going to explain that the word Vayeosser is similar to the word Vayechoser, which means to dig. Kavyachol, the Eidishta had to dig open a hole under the Kisei covered for Menashe's tshuva to come in, because otherwise there wouldn't be any reasonable way that a tshuva like that, especially a tshuva, a tshuva like that, should be able to get in, but the Eidishta still accepts it. Right? Yeah, the Malachim wouldn't let it, yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about that later on.
So that's why the use of Lashon.
That's why the Lashon Vayasi. Okay. Turn it up on him. Shloisha Bo Balila. There were three people in Tanakh who argued against the Eidishta with an Alila. So Rashi says, like they, instead of davening, like they argued, they gave an argument, which is they gave an irrefutable argument. Or Marsha says, it's not really that irrefutable. Their arguments, each of them, we're going to say, Kayin, Ace of Menashe. Each of their arguments could be refuted very easily. But they would claim that they weren't refuted, and they would continue for the rest of their lives saying, oh, the Eidishta didn't have any answer to me. So therefore, like the Eidishta was, so to speak, like you said, put on the spot and had to, yeah. Elohen Kayin Ace of Menashe. Kayin dichtiv gadol avonim in esoi. Kayin, after he killed Hevel, he says to the Eidishta, is my avera too great to be born? Meaning, amal afan of Ribbono Shel Olam, klum gadol avonim shishim ribo shasidin lachti lefanecha. Is my avera any greater than the avera of the 600,000 Jews who in the future are going to sin before you with the eagle? The after silayach lehem, and you're going to forgive them. So the same thing, you should be able to forgive me. So the same thing, you should be able to forgive me. Okay, but Avodah Zarah is in some ways it is. We said before, Tosh Yodah Be'ikr, that you're defying Hashem personally, so to speak. Yeah. And in fact, by the way, the Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out where do we see that he made any comparison with the eagle? Because here he uses the expression Gadol Avodim Minasoi, and the eagle is described as Hachal Gedola. So we see that there's a certain comparison between them. Esav, Dichtiv, Havrocha Achati L'cha'avi. Esav complains, he says to Yitzchak, do you only have one bracha? That you gave the bracha to Yaakov and that's it, you have no brachas left? So what's the argument? Marsha says, the vote is, that the tricky argument is he's arguing, apparently,
well,
that we... Fine, but he said, but Yitzchak is saying in the name of Hashem. So, yes. Yeah, the brachas are given in the name of Hashem. But so Marsha explains that Esav was arguing, if you're telling me you have only one bracha to give, I guess that means there must be more than one Eidishta, and therefore he controls one bracha, and the other powers control other brachas, and therefore you don't have them available. So therefore, again, the Eidishta can't let that stand, and therefore Esav has to be given a bracha.
Well, what's the answer to
this? The answer is in each case. In the case of Kayin, he was forgiven, at least temporarily. In the case of Esav, he was given a bracha.
Oh,
yeah.
What you said is they're, according to them, were irrefutable, but there is a...
So Rashi says they're irrefutable. Rashi says, things where there'd be no reasonable answer to them. Marshall says, of course there'd be a reasonable answer to each of these things, but the Eidishta didn't want to make them be able to claim that, look, I gave the Eidishta an argument that he couldn't answer back.
And... So Marshat says what the answer for...
No, he doesn't spell out what the answer, but I mean, we can figure out for ourselves. In the case of Kayin, for example, sure, murderer, especially of a quarter of the world's population at that time, is.
And with the last one...
The last one is Menashe, but Tchila Karola Lekoitave. First he called to the various gods, the various Getchkes, all of a sudden Karola Lekoitave, and in the end, finally, he called out to the Eidishta and said, like we said before, that if you don't answer me, then I'm going to think that you're the same as everybody else. So therefore, again, like, so to speak, put the Eidishta on the spot.
Super cool.
Yeah, very cool.
What's the answer for the two brachas?
The answer is the Eidishta controls all the brachas, but he gave me only one to give, and that's it. I gave it to Yaakov.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. But nevertheless, he still gives him a bracha. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Abba Sholom, Afa Hogias Hashem Goes Yitzchol. Abba Sholom said, another case of a person who loses their place in Adam Haba is somebody who speaks out the name of Hashem with its letters. So, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, over Gvulin, over Lashon Oga. There's a couple of details. First of all, this only applies to Gvulin. It only applies outside the Beis Mikdash. In the Beis Mikdash, they would use the name Yudke Vavke, or even Rashi discusses over here a little further that the shame over here may not mean, as we talked about in the Mishnah, may not mean just the name Yudke Vavke. It may mean the shame of 42 letters, the one that comes out from the initials of Anu B'Koyach. That one or the other of those they would use in the Beis Mikdash. The machlokas among the Rishonim, whether they just use the name Yudke Vovke that Amram holds that way, or whether they use the shame Ben Membez, whatever it is, that you're allowed to do in the Beis Mikdash. So when we say in the Mishnah that when a person speaks it out, he loses his place in Elam Haba, it's the Gvulin, if he does it outside the Beis Mikdash. And second of all, over Lashon Oga. Second of all, even in the Beis Mikdash, you're not allowed to say it in Lashon Oga. So what is Lashon Oga?
How do you do it, Anav Akayach?
Say the word Anav Akayach. You're not saying out the actual initials. You look at them while you're saying Anav Akayach. You have them in mind, but you don't actually say them. So what is Lashon Oga? So Rashi says a couple of explanations. One is that Lashon Oga means laz, means in a foreign language. So you don't speak it out in Lashon Kodesh. You speak it out in some other language. Which apparently would mean that we're not talking about the name Yudke Vovke, because that's not really translatable in the first place. It would mean, in that case, it would mean the name of 42. Or Rashi says another explanation of Oga means Lashon Uga, like a circle, like when you have a group of people together who are talking Dibrei Chol, then you're not allowed to mention this Shame Ben Membez over there in such an environment, even if they're standing in the Beis Hamikdash. It's also to do that.
The context
where you're saying it is important. The Yad Ramah says you had a different explanation. The Lashon Oga means that you pronounce it using other nekudas. There are some of the Chidah talks about the idea. It's brought in other Sfarim as well that this refers not only also if we say that it's talking about the Shem Ben Arba, the Shem Yudke Vavke, not only to pronouncing it as it's actually written, to sounding it out. It also means also saying just the letters one after the other, Yud, and then Hey, and then Vav, etc. So that, which is why we usually say Yud K Vav K, and even in davening before Baruch Shama, we say Yud K Vav K in order to avoid that issue.
That's why we say B.
We say B over there because that's what it is. We want to combine together Yud K with Vav K. But the point is that you
say K or K.
What?
Before Baruch Shama.
Most people that I know of say K. Really, most people that I know say K. Okay, I mean there you have a Bays in between, so it's not so bad. If you say
right, that's
right,
that's the
reason so, of that. Right, but so without the base for sure, without
Yud.
So I guess there are some people who say Yud and then Hey, and then yeah, I don't know. I myself always say, well, always learned to say Yud Kei Bavok. I don't know. All right. Okay. So now we're going to get to now from here from here the next six blocks are going to be dealing or the next five six blocks are going to be dealing with the seven people that we mentioned in the Mishnah who lost their place in Olam Haba. We said in the Mishnah Shlosh Malachim Ba'avah Yotzei Chula that there are three kings in Jewish history and four commoners who lost their place in Olam Haba, and we're going to discuss them one by one.
Menashe
is one of them, according to Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with that in the Mishnah, and we'll get to him later on Daf Kufimo. But we'll go through. The Gemara is going to devote about a blot to each one of them. Mm-hmm. So Tana Rabbanan, the first one on the list is Yerovam. Yerovam ben Nevat, the one who set up the Egle Azov and was Choytio Machdias Rabbi. So first of all, what does the name Yerovam signify?
What generation was he in?
So what do you have? Shlomo dies, and the kingdom splits. You had Rechavam took over in Yehuda and Binyamin, and the rest of the people rebelled against him and set up Yerovam as their king.
Yerovam was in the north.
So Yerovam is the 10 northern Shvatim.
He's the first king
of the 10 Shvatim, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So Tanarabon, Yerovam, why is he called by the name Yerovam? Shriba om, because he ribak the people. So Rashi says riba means to make lie down or kneel down or whatever. In other words, he lowered the level of the Jewish people. Different other mafarshim talk about different other ideas. Riba can also be related to the word reveya and nirba, that calls the people to be mizana. Dava acha, another explanation. Yerovam is called that shalom meriba ba'am because he caused a split in the people. He caused them to argue with each other. One person is worshiping Avodah Zarah, the other person is trying to protest, and therefore it comes to big arguments and big splits among the people. And another explanation is because he caused a rift between the Jewish people and the Eivishter, in that he caused the Jewish people to worship of Adizara and stop going to the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore that brought about a rift between them and the Eivishter. Why is he called Ben Nevot? So, of course, the simple meaning is Nevot was his father's name, but the Gemara darshins, Ben Shinibet Veloira, he's the son of somebody who saw Nibet Meloshin Habata, that he gave Veloira, but he didn't see clearly. He misunderstood what he saw, as the Gemara is going to say. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Hu Nevot, Hu Micha, Hu Sheva Ben Bichri. He's actually, there's three people who are all the same. Nevot, the father of Yeravam, is the same as Micha, the one who made Pesel Micha, and is also the same as
not the
prophet Micha. This is the Micha who made the Pesel that's described at the end of Sefer Shoftim. Who Sheva ben Bichri? He is also identical with Sheva ben Bichri, who started a rebellion against David HaMelech late in David HaMelech's reign, after they had finished with the revolt of Absalom. The Sheva ben Bichri started a revolt over there.
These are all the same person.
So they're all the same person. Well, so some a number of the Mefarshim talk about the question, though, how is it possible they're the same person? In particular, fine, Micha doesn't say what Shevet he was from, but Sheva ben Bichri, the Pasuk calls him Ish Yemini, so meaning he was from Shevet Binyamin, whereas Yeravam and Nevat was from Shevet Ephraim. So how are they the same person? So they talk about different possibilities. Some of them say that maybe, for example, Marsha says maybe he really was from Shevet Ephraim. He's called Ish Yemini because at that period in history, Shevet Binyamin were the ones who tended to be against Malchus Beis David, because they still remembered Shaul. So therefore, they were opposed to David having taken over. So in other words, in reality, he's from Ephraim, but he's called Ish Yemini because he acted like the people of Binyamin. They remembered Shaul. But still, so they weren't so willing to accept David so easily. Eventually, that changed. I mean, when the kingdom split, Binyamin stayed together with Yehuda. But earlier, Binyamin had friction with Yehuda because of this kind of thing. So that's one explanation. Some of the Mefarshim say that maybe Sheva ben Bichri, maybe his mother was from Binyamin and his father was from Ephraim, and therefore he can be called Ish Yemini from his mother's side. I'll get up like we find by Mordechai. They say that maybe it means that they're not literally the same person, but they're descendants of each other, like there's a tendency passed down in the family, or that it's a Gilgal one of another. Anyway. Okay. Why is he called by all these three names? Nevot, he's called Shenibet Vilegra. He's called Nevot because, like we just said, he looked, he gazed, but he saw, he misunderstood what he saw. Micha Shenismach Lebinyan. He's called Micha because he was crushed in the building. The famous story that you have, the Jewish babies were being put into the walls in Mitzrayim to fill up the quota of bricks. And then Moshe is complaining to the Eivishter about it, and the Eivishter says, I have my reasons, but if you don't accept, then fine, take one of these kids out, you'll see what becomes of him. He takes out Micha, and he grows up to make Pesel Micha. So that's why he's called Micha. Umashma is Sheva ben Bichri Shmaim. What was his real name? Sheva ben Bichri. Okay, Tana Rabbanan, Shloshan Nibtu Velodo. There were three people that were three groups. Actually, it actually gives a second explanation of Nismach Mechavinyan, by the way, is that he became poor by getting too invested in building. It actually brings from a Gemara in Sota that a person gets too invested in building, they can easily lose a fortune by it. He speculated in real estate, and therefore he's called
building.
Building, yeah, whatever. Okay. Also, could be an Achanasa Moth, right? Yeah.
So it could be building, could be buying.
Okay. Turn up on a Shloshan Nibtu Velero. There were three people, three groups who saw, but they didn't. But they misunderstood what they saw. They saw an omen for the future, but they misunderstood it. The Elohim Nevot v'Achitoyfo v'Tzagnini Pari. Number one is Nevot that we just mentioned. Achitoyfo, the father of Yeravam. Achitoyfo, the advisor of David, who we're going to talk about later in the parak. V'Tzagnini Pari and Pari's stargazers, namely Nevot. This Nevot one time saw in a dream or whatever, he saw fire coming out of his aver. He thought this must be a sign that I myself am one day going to become king. The fire representing kingship.
Yeah, but from that...
Well, Veloihi, but he was wrong because Yeravam did not like Yenei. Actually, it's Yeravam was his descendant. That's why it came from his Aver, representing his son. So therefore, he himself started the rebellion because he thought he's destined to be king, but he misunderstood because really it was his son who was destined to be king. By the way, though, with that said, by the way, that's interesting. The Targum on the Targum on a Pesuk in Tehillah, Hakol Asa Yafa Be'itzei, the Targum says over there, by any logic, Sheva ben Bichri's revolt should have Taka been successful. He had most of the Shvatim on his side until he was defeated. What happened, though, the Eivishter took into consideration, if Sheva ben Bichri is successful and the Jewish people split apart over there, the Beis HaMikdash is never going to be built. Therefore, he caused Sheva ben Bichri's rebellion to collapse and Sheva ben Bichri himself to get killed in order that David will remain the sole king and after him Shlomo and the Beit HaMikdash can be built. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so that's Nebot. Achitofel saw, also in a dream, or whatever, he saw Tzaraas on his Aver. Again, who saw Ihu Melech? He thought that means he's going to be a king. So how can that be? So first of all, because they give a few different explanations. There's a few different explanations. First of all, we learned a few blocks ago when we were talking in the whole sugya about Mashiach. We said the Mashiach is a mitzvah. No, not necessarily all over the body. The point is, Tzaraas represents, as first of the Maharal talks about, a Masorah, it's separated from everybody else, the same way the king is higher than everybody else. But also, there's that idea. Mashiach, we said it was a Masorah in the sense that the Pnimiyus Inyonim, we said over there, based on a Sicha, that the idea is Tzaraas represents that a person is basically complete the Pnimiyus, and it's only the Chitzonius that they have problems. So, in that sense, then, Tzaraas represents a very high level person, potentially a king. But again, Velohi Bathsheba Bite Hudinakumina. No, but again, he misunderstood. It means that his daughter, or actually granddaughter, Bathsheba, came from him, and therefore, so he has a descendant who's a king. I mean, Shlomo is his great grandson, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, but not he himself. But that's why that's again why when Avshalom revolted, that is why Achitofel went over to Avshalom's side. Because he figured, what Rashi says, what he figured is, so now what he figured is Avshalom will take over the kingship. Eventually, an opportunity will come that the kingship will actually go to me. How so? Some of the Mefarshim say an interesting idea. Early in the revolt over there, Achitofel advises Avshalom that what you should do is you need to make a public display of the fact that you're definite, that nobody should think you're ever going to reconcile with David, because otherwise people are going to be afraid to support you, because like this, they're going to think you're going to reconcile with David and they're going to be thrown under the bus. So what should you do? He tells Avshalom, your father left behind 10 pilagshim to guard the palace. Go take them, go rape them. And that way it'll demonstrate that you're never going to reconcile with your father. What was the real reason he did it? The real reason, because he figured afterwards, later on, I'll have a chance to bring Avshalom in front of a Beis Din, get him executed for being mezaneh with his father's wife, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, and then he'll become king. But he misunderstood, because he didn't realize that it meant that his great-grandson was going to become king.
So what happened? He did?
So in the end, no, he supported Avshalom until he realized, eventually, he realized the revolt was going to fail, and then, as we learned in Baba Basra, he went and hanged himself.
But Avshalom didn't go to the...
No, he did. He did do it with the 10 pilagshim. Yes. The Gemara mentions, and the Mishnah mentions in Sota, that his punishment for that later on was where eventually, when there was a war going on between him and David's side, he got caught by his hair in a tree.
Oh, yeah.
Yoav soldiers find him over there, and they take 10 sticks, and then they take 10 spears and spear him and kill him with them. So the 10 spears corresponded to the 10 pilagshim that he violated. Okay. So that's the second example. It's Tagmine Pare. Where do we see that Pare's advisors, that is stargazers, misunderstood what they saw? What does it mean when the Pasuk says after the story of the rock that Moshe hit and therefore he was denied going into Eretz Yisrael? The Pasuk says they are the water of the Meriba. What do you mean they? Hema Sharo, it's Tagmine Pare v'toh. This is the very water that the Pare's stargazers had seen many years earlier, but they misunderstood. They saw via their stargazing that the one who's going to redeem the Jewish people is going to be punished through water, is going to be harmed through water. Omar, so therefore they said, that's why they said that every baby boy who was born should be thrown into the Nile. They didn't realize that means that 120 years later, Moshe is going to be punished because of Mei Meriba. That's Ro v'lo yodah ma'ro.
They thought that
he's going to be punished, that he's going to be harmed by the water of the Nile, and they didn't realize that it meant Mei Meriba over there in the desert in Kaddish. Fine. Now that we talked about what Yerovam's name means and what his father's name means, so Taka, where do we know that Yerovam lost his place in El Abba? Because the Pasuk says in Malachim, this matter that they set up the Egle Azov and prevented the people from going to Yerushalayim, etc., was a sin, was an avera that was held against the household of Yerovam, and it caused them to be destroyed and eradicated from the face of the earth. What's the double expression? Means they were destroyed in this world and eradicated in the next world.
And that's because?
Because of the Egle Azav, because of the avera that he caused the Jewish people to do. So why in the first place did Yeravam have a schus to become king? Okay, I mean, we know the kingdom had to be split because of the things that Shlomo did wrong or allowed his wives to do wrong, whatever. But why is this Yeravam? The reason is because Shaychiach has Shlomo. The reason is because he had the schus that he had given Shlomo Musar for something that Shlomo had done wrong, as the Gemara is going to explain. So in that case, why was he punished? Because he gave him Musar in public and embarrassed him. Now, the question is, what do you mean, why was he punished? We know why he was punished, because of the Egla Azal. Marsha explains, the point of the question is, given that he had the schus of giving Shlomo Musar, and given that the Gemara is going to talk about later, he was a tremendous Tamar Chacham, why didn't these schusim protect him that he shouldn't end up doing terrible Aveda? The reason is because he did the mitzvah itself in an improper way. It's like this. The Pasuk says,
the mitzvah of
giving Shlomo Musar. This is the matter in which he lifted up a hand against King Shlomo, against the king. Shlomo bona asamiloi. Now Shlomo had built up the miloi. The miloi is an area in Yerushalayim, like an open plaza in Yerushalayim. So Shlomo had built it up. Sogar asperes ir David of it, and he closed up the breaches, the open spaces in the walls of the city of David, his father. So what was wrong with that, and what does Yeravam have against that? Amalai, so Yeravam tells him, David avicha paras peratis v'chayma, look at this, your father David made breaches in the wall of Yerushalayim, kadesh yalav yisrael l'regel, so this way Jewish people can come up more easily, be oil l'regel. But after gadarta, and you have gone and closed up those breaches, kadelasis angaria l'bas pari, in order to make angaria for the daughter of Pari, who is one of your wives. What is angaria? So it actually has two explanations. One is that, like this, if all the breaches are closed up, meaning that everybody has to go through the gate, once everybody's going through the gate, you can put up toll booths. And therefore, you're able to collect tolls, which you're going to use, therefore, for keeping up Bas Pari in style. The other explanation, Rashi says, is that what Yeravam is accusing Shlomo of doing is you closed up all the gates, then you made a tower for Bas Pari above one of the gates, so everybody has to pass through Davka that gate underneath her palace, and whenever she wants to grab somebody and use them for her household work or whatever, which is another meaning of Angaria, she's able to. So therefore, you're making it harder for people to be Olo L'Rego. Then Rashi brings a third explanation, which is that Shlomo used to, we learned about this earlier in the Masechta, Shlomo used to keep the keys of the Bais HaMikdash under his pillow. So like this, if he slept in the morning, then they'd have to wait with the Avodah until he wakes up. So Yeravam is accusing him that you're doing that in order because you want people to have to buy you off, and this way you can use that money for trinkets and whatever, for Bas Pari.
They gave money to get a key.
That's Yeravam is accusing him. If it's not necessarily the true, but that's what he's accusing, and that's what you're doing over there.
I was never accused of that.
Okay. By the way, you know, it's pretty ironic when you get down to it that Yeravam is accusing Shlomo of preventing Aliyah L'Regel, and he himself wound up doing that Aveira even worse himself. So, yeah.
Wow.
Because we say it later on after he became king, and he set up the Egla Azov and prevented the Jewish people from coming to Yerushalayim. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Yeah. So what's the expression that he lifted up his hand against the king? What does that specific expression mean? It means that he took off his tefillin in front of the king. So what's wrong with taking off his tefillin in front of the king? So Rashi says two explanations. One is he should have turned to his side because it's not derech eretz to take off your tefillin directly in front of the king. And Shulchan Aruch brings by the same token, it's not derech eretz to take off your tefillin directly in front of your rebbe. Turn to his side. So therefore, by doing it right in front of the king, it showed a lack of derech eretz. Or Rashi says a second explanation is he took off his tefillin like he's about to come for a fight. Like I'm taking up my tefillin, like rolling up my sleeve, and therefore that's a chutzpahdik way of acting. Different other mafoshim talk about different other possibilities, including, for example, when do you take off your tefillin and you have to go to the bathroom. So that's not a derech eretz thing to do in front of the king. Or there's an interesting explanation that's brought from Reb Shachna, the father-in-law and the Rebbe of the Rama. That is that the Gemara mentions elsewhere that a Talmud should do all kinds of avodah for his Rebbe, because that's a shimush tamar chacham, you're supposed to serve a tamar chacham, except for taking off his shoes, because that's something that normally only slaves do, and people are going to think that you're an Eved. However, if you're wearing tefillin, then you can, because an Eved doesn't wear tefillin. So therefore, the vote is, if you're wearing tefillin, you're allowed to take off your Rebbe's shoe. You're allowed to take off your Rebbe's shoes. No, it's not, because it's a covered for your Rebbe, and covered for your Rebbe, because the covered of your Rebbe's Torah outweighs the covered of the tefillin.
Even if he doesn't himself, he doesn't have tefillin on him?
Well, yes,
used
people used to wear tefillin all day.
All right, but
anyway. The point is, so the point is, therefore, that Yerovam taking off his tefillin amounts to saying, I don't have to serve you like a Talmud serves his Rebbe anymore, and that's a chutzpah.
Assuming tefillin,
that's another explanation. Is he uncovered his head while taking off his tefillin, or he took off his tefillin before Shloima did, and therefore it's like the derech eretzika thing is your Rebbe takes off your tefillin first, and then you take off your tefillin. Whatever, so that's what I mean.
You can put on tefillin in front of your Rebbe?
Again, given the part about bearing your head, not necessarily. You should also turn to the side a little bit so you're not uncovering your head directly in front of your Rebbe, but other than that, yeah.
Taking off is a bigger issue.
It's the pride that Yerovam had that pushed him out of the world, that made him lose his place in El Haba. Namely, its pasuk says that Yerovam thought to himself after he became king, now at this point, what's going to happen is the next time the kingship is going to return to Beis David. Namely, if this people go up to bring korbanos in the house of Hashem in Yerushalayim, then the hearts of these people will turn back to their original master, El Rechavam Melech Yehuda, to Rechavam the king of Yehuda, Baharoguni, and they'll kill me, Rechavam Melech Yehuda, and they'll return to being ruled by Rechavam. What does this mean? Omar, he thought to himself like this. Miri, we know the Kabbalah, De'en Yeshiva Ba'azara, Elol Ma'afah Beis Yehuda Bobat. We know that only kings of Beis Yehuda, only kings of Beis David, are allowed to sit in the Azara. So therefore, if they see Rechavam sitting and I'm standing, sadly, they're gonna figure, Ho'malka V'ho'abda. That must be the king, Rechavam, and this must be the Eved, Yerovam. The Iyasivna, and on the other hand, if I sit there, Murd B'malchus Avoy, I'll be a Murd B'malchus, because I'm showing that I'm a king equal to Rechavam, V'kaplin me, and then they'll kill me as a Murd B'malchus. V'ozlubasra, and then they'll follow him. Miyad Vayivat HaMelech, so immediately the king took advice from his advisors, Vayat Shnei Eglei Zahav, and he made the two Eglei Zahav, Vayomer Aleihem, and he says to the people, Rav Lochem Me'aloi to Yerushalayim, it's enough, it's too far for you to bother going to Yerushalayim. Behold, these are your gods, Yisrael, that took you up from the land of Mitzrayim. He put one in Beis El and one in Don at opposite ends of his kingdom to make it like more convenient for people to go there instead of Yerushalayim. By gas station. By the way, though, it's interesting. The Malbim says on the post, on a couple of psukim later, that what ended up happening is the people actually would go to the trouble even of going to the far away one. In other words, Yerovam figured to make it more convenient for them. They ended up getting so attached to these Eglei Azov that they would follow them even if it was kind of further away, even if it was more convenient to travel to Yerushalayim and go. So they worship them. I mean, you have there's a big machlokes among the Mekorshim on the Pesukim whether they were out and out of a Dezorah, as in they were meant to represent a power other than the Eivishter, or whether they were also because of Loisach L'Chapesel, but they were meant in they were originally meant officially at least in honor of Hashem. And there's an argument among the Mekorshim on the Pesukim.
Doing an Eglei Zav.
So one idea is the symbol of Shevet Yosef is a shur, b'chor shur
rehadoloi. Trouble already from the Eglei.
So we'll learn that later on in the Gemara. But yeah, so Yerovam argued. There's actually a Yerushalmi that talks about this. That Yerovam argued. There's nothing wrong with making an Eglei Zav. You see, the people in the Midbar were forgiven for theirs. So therefore, in that case, it's appropriate to make one now. We'll talk about tomorrow in the Gemara how he managed to bamboozle even the Chachamim of that generation. It's worth mentioning. By the way, it's worth mentioning one last thing. Besides the Gemara saying Gassus Aruach, you see also over here how far a person's lack of betochen can leave him. The Eivishter promised Yerovam, the Eivishter sent Achiyah Shiloini, the Navi, to tell Yerovam, you're going to be the king over the Aseret HaShvatim. Which means Yerovam should have been able to realize, of course, there's not going to be a problem if we all go on and our Erlul Regal. The Eivishter knows we have to be Erlul Regal. The Eivishter knows Rechavam can sit there and I can. If he says, I'm going to be the king, obviously the Eivishter has thought that all out already. But he didn't. He didn't have that level of betochen in the Eivishter, and therefore that led him from one.
He had to initiate all kind of cascade to.
But all he had to do was realize that if the Eivishter promised, "I'm going to be king," then nothing is going
to
happen.
How can the Eivishter promise such a rasha to become king?
He wasn't a rasha at the time. He was not a rasha. We're going to learn the Gemara later. He was a time of chacham.
The Eivishter.
The Eivishter gives the person the chiddush chafshes.
So why was Yaakov
so scared? Shema Yudim Achet. Okay.
Yeah,
Who did this?